Welcome everyone to All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 216, recording this on the 17th of May 2017. I'm Steve Litchfield. With me I have Jason Snowden, a guest. Hi there.
Hi Steve, thanks for having me on. Delighted to be here yet again.
Yes, Mr. Rafe Blanford's having a busy week, and Android's big show, the Google I.O. this week. Presumably he's tied to the keynote at the moment, analysing all the implications. So in the meantime, we'll have Jason on for his comments on the various stories and wibblings I put up during the week. Starting, Jason, if I may, just with something we've been putting off for a few weeks. Rafe and I keep mentioning we've had some letters into the podcast, and we never quite get round to answering them. So while you're on, let's try and catch up. So here we go.
Sure.
Billy Drake says, I listened to the top five mistakes that led to the current state of Windows Phone, and I broadly agree with your findings. I abandoned Windows Phone because of the lack of support for my Lumia 800. That's going back a long way. Billy says, the device was beautiful, but I was very disappointed to find that the device wasn't upgradable to Windows Phone 8. When it came to time to upgrade, I chose Apple. I had lost trust in the Windows platform. You argued that Windows Phone should have arrived earlier. However, I believe it arrived too soon. Windows Phone 7.5 was the first serious misstep in my experience, he says. So, he says, Windows Phone is no longer on the shelves, but Microsoft applications have taken its place. This is a change for the better. Billy says, I have two phones, an iOS device for work and my own personal Huawei P8 running Android. Both phones are loaded with Microsoft apps. Office 365 is our primary business platform, and I use 365 for my own personal content. It's all synced to OneDrive and available across all my other devices like the iPad and PC. I share content between accounts and also with my wife's Office account. Office 365 is far more important than the devices because content is the central focus of the system. I'm no longer dependent on Microsoft to produce a device to run their apps. Final point, he says, for me, those apps are improving at a high pace, and this shows a focus that was absent for quite a while on mobile. He says, thanks for producing so much content. I look forward to your podcast on a weekly basis. Maybe AAWP is all about Windows products, which is interesting. Any comments, Jason?
Yeah, adaptable. I'm a half full type of guy, so I'd probably start with the latter half, the positives that, yeah, it's true that Microsoft have developed their applications across a load of devices, and you can now, by the sounds of it, I've not tried it, be quite well embedded in the Microsoft Windows ecosystem using a non-Windows phone device. So that's a real positive. I know there was a lot of concern, and probably there'll be still comments to this day, that wasn't the right thing to do. People concerned that, you know, they were allowing iOS and Android to get, in some cases, what seemed like a better experience on a non-Windows device. On the other hand, looking back to the sort of negatives, yeah, I can see that point of view. I came in at Windows 8 myself, so in my course of upgrades, I've not experienced a device I wanted to keep that I couldn't then upgrade, which I think speaks to the point that we do, you know, certainly upgrade our devices every 1 or 2 years. Most sort of consumers do. I think, you can see certainly across other ecosystems. I know colleagues who've got older phones on Android or on iOS, and they get very slow and buggy, and they can't run the latest version. And we know that Apple have had that story. I suppose the distinct difference with Microsoft is that there have been these junctures where they've drawn a line and gone, right, that's it. Windows 7, go to 7.5, no more. Windows 8, most devices a few devices have gone to 10, but not any. They've drawn quite a hard line, whereas I think in the Android and iOS world, I'm not 100% certain, but from the experience of friends, I know it's just been, oh, this has got a bit old and buggy. There's not been this clear message that said, well, you can only run the latest operating system on these phones. So perhaps that makes it slightly more stark. But yeah, for myself, I mean, like I said, I mean, if I could, and if there were enough new fancy stuff coming out every year, I probably would upgrade every year, and I wouldn't really notice that I couldn't upgrade my old device. I'd be just happy with the new shiny thing in the hand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've said this to Rafe several times in the podcast, really, but we have arrived at a world whereby you can use services like, I don't know, Twitter, Facebook, Slack, Instagram, email, obviously, or web browsing, various things via browser. All of these things could actually be done on any number of devices around me. And as I look around, we've got an iPhone, 3 Android devices, 4 Windows phones, a tablet, 2 laptops, a desktop. And I could do exactly the same job on every single one of them. And it wouldn't really matter apart from the physicality of manipulating the device, which when I use, we have got to a system in 2017 where applications, services and content they're basically independent a lot of the time from whichever manufacturer makes the device and whichever manufacturer is actually making the operating system. To a large extent, for my purposes, it's entirely irrelevant.
Yeah, quite. And that's a good point about form factor driving things. And between a mobile phone type device, a tablet sized device, and a laptop, there are distinct use cases that I find, I will move between. In fairness, I'll probably start most things, or want to start things, on a phone because it's in my hand, it's on and ready.
Yeah.
But other times I'll think, this is going to be a long document. I'm going to go and run a laptop. Or I might be like, well, this is a bit of browsing, but I just need to see a bigger screen, and I'll get the tablet out. In fairness, I don't use tablets that much. I do find that just use phone and laptop work for me. But you're right, you fit to the use case, and these days you can do that across all range of devices and operating systems, as shown by my reading Google Docs on this Windows phone that I'm holding.
And it's the same Windows phone that you're doing the Skype call to record the podcast, thus showing Windows 10 Mobile is actually pretty capable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And a slight side note, I've recently started using some wireless headphones, and they work brilliantly with my phone. It's like a new device. I can switch them off, stop a podcast, switch them back on, start a podcast straight on without ever getting the device out of my pocket. So, yeah, fully up to date, I would say.
Yeah, well, you sound pretty good. The second letter we had in was from David Knight. He says, I was just looking at your post about the upgrade to Windows 10 Mobile build 15.24 for fastering users. Given that it's a relatively small upgrade with some bug fixes, it was notable, he says, that three different phones, the Elite X3, the Lumia 950, and the Alcatel Idol 4S, were mentioned in the article as having model-specific bug fixes. That's a fairly significant proportion, he says, of phones eligible to run Windows 10 Mobile, especially given that future updates will be limited to 11 phones, only 13 if you count the XL versions of different devices. So my question is, says David, to what extent do you think that Microsoft wanted to create a small device ecosystem, with the unfortunate after effect of creating a small user base, so as to make upgrading and bug fixing a much simpler process? If Microsoft has the aim of manufacturing a Surface phone as the ultimate enterprise mobile device, then certainly this approach allows them to spend more time and resources on developing the OS rather than firefighting bug fixes for multiple devices. So I think what David's saying is, yes, these hard lines that you mentioned that Microsoft has been drawing under particular platforms and families of devices has created some ill will, shall we say, although the Insiders program does soften the blow an awful lot. But by reducing the number of devices it's actually committing to support and update, it makes it easier for them to fix bugs and to develop software for the future.
Yeah, perhaps there's a certain bit to that. I suppose I'm going to recant myself and say, well, half full guy. I don't know. Maybe this is a little bit overly rose-tinted. It would be nice to think that. And certainly it is a natural fact that having a smaller set of devices makes it easier to update, but I'm not quite so sure I necessarily would want to sort of promote or push forward that Microsoft were doing this with a goal of having a small number of devices. I don't know, but then, yeah, there could be something to it. Certainly, either way, it's good that they are getting these bug fixes. I didn't notice on my 950 any particular change, but then I didn't have any particular bugs. The creator's update made a huge change to me. It certainly feels a lot different, even if necessary testing doesn't really show it. But yeah, I don't know, maybe so. Certainly, this is the world that Windows 10 Mobile is in. There are less devices, so therefore they can be a bit more specific with the update. So I think it's just good testament to the team that is there that they are doing this at least.
Yeah, so it's clearly they are just in bug fixing mode, because let's face it, the telephony side of things and the Windows communication stack on ARM is basically pretty mature now. You've got the 950 in your hand, and over 3 or 4 years they have basically mastered it. So when they do get round to putting telephony in a super duper ultra portable PC or whatever we end up getting, that side of things will be pretty well bug fixed. It's been noticeable we had a new fastering build even today as we record this podcast, but I haven't even bothered reporting on the story on the site, because it's basically just a couple of very small bug fixes. It's clear that this, they're now calling it the Fall Creators Update, which is Redstone 3. They're doing all the efforts being put into user applications. You saw this story mix thing they were talking about at Build last week. And there's this thing where you have your favorite contacts on the Windows 10 desktop on the bar at the bottom of the screen, and you can nudge them and drag things and drop them on top of your favorite contacts and so forth. But all of these things are desktop specific, not because the desktop is necessarily the darling, but because these are desktop Interface features, they're things that live on a desktop or a laptop screen rather than on a small 5-inch phone screen. So I can see why they're doing this. I can see why they've split the Redstone 3 builds with all these extra big screen features from the mobile builds, which are now getting what's called Feature 2 builds in a kind of in parallel, but it's not really in parallel. This is hard to say really without looking at the kernel code exactly how in step they are. Do you think that mobile is being completely left behind, or do you think these sequence of small updates are actually keeping it up to date enough that at some point the two can be brought back together?
I'd like to think that they are keeping them both together. I mean, when I was trying to think as you were saying that when I first heard about Windows 10 on ARM, my first impression was, well, this is going to be ages away. This is just, we'll not see this for like, maybe not years, but certainly a year, or certainly months nearer to a year, 11 or 12 or so, yeah. So I think in some senses, I'm quite impressed that A, it does seem that they are doing things on the Windows 10 desktop side, so that what was called the My People app, sorry, I forget the real name, which is really great. And I still think it has a lot of really good uses on desktop, being able to share documents and send documents quickly. That is great. But as you say, you can see that builds into something that can be part of a mobile device as well. So I'm impressed at how they've progressed that. But then I'm equally impressed that they have maintained, to me at least, made a significant change to mobile. Mobile hasn't sort of stopped it. Because it did feel when they announced the Windows 10 and ARM that, yeah, you know, Windows 10 mobile wasn't quite there. So there was a concern, well, are they going to make sure it gets to the finish line, as it were, as a fully complete and usable system? And indeed they have. So I'm impressed. I'm cautiously, optimistic. I think the real test will come when, I think as you referred to earlier, this kind of telephony stack, which is makes me sound like I know what I'm talking about, but I don't, but all that sort of mobile stuff, how they can take what they've learned from Windows 10 and other previous versions and put it into Windows 10 and ARM, because I wasn't as much involved in the earlier versions, but it did feel certainly from Windows 8 to 10, it seemed like there were some things they forgot. Glance screen was an obvious one that got forgot by Nokia in one model, and then obviously in terms of the functionality in the latest Windows 10 anniversary in terms of when it was on. Now, a really minor thing perhaps, slightly annoying for me because I really like it, but it just sort of made a sense that, oh, they're forgetting things there. And obviously if they're going to move from Windows 10 mobile to Windows 10 on ARM, they need to do the very opposite of forget. They need to build on what they've learned in Windows 10 mobile and its predecessors so they can make sure that where they are with Windows 10 and ARM is up to date with what is out there on Android and Apple devices now, because that's the one thing that they've always had. And speak to a piece you said earlier, that they were always playing catch-up. They need to be at least at parity with other mobile devices, however they want to term it, whether it's a phone or not, and ideally ahead, to be able to offer something to make people want to switch or use their devices as well.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people have been saying that Windows 10 Mobile isn't, quote, done. I mean, I've been saying in several articles, look, it is basically done. It's pretty stable, certainly on my 950, 950 XL here. It's pretty stable, even on my Lumia 1020, completely, utterly unsupported on Windows 10 Mobile. Redstone 2, so I must get this right, the creators update. It's running absolutely smoothly and absolutely fine, and that really wasn't expected. But every time I post an article basically claiming that, yeah, okay, there are a few things that got missed with Glance Screen, and there are a few tiny bits where they haven't dotted the I's and crossed the T's, but on the whole, it's pretty darn stable and done. People pop up saying, oh, there's this issue, and the Bluetooth doesn't work right, and such and such crashes. Do you think it's fair for me to that my standard response, which is, okay, look, do your backups, hard reset it, and then restore from the backup, and then tell me it's better. 9 times out of 10, I would say people find that the glitches go away, and all of a sudden, this rebuilt system from the ground up with their backed up, you know, data and applications reinstalled, everything then works fine again. Do you think that's fair?
I think it is. In fact, I'm about to test it myself because I've actually got a non Windows OS issue. My memory card in my 950 has got corrupted. It's been corrupted for a while, so I've kind of waited for this to be able to do the full job of taking all the music off and all that messing around. So we'll see if I get any sort of improvements generally. But I think you generally, I mean, in terms of bugs, occasionally I do still get an oddity, which is the old volume setting bug, where the drop down for the play, pause, etc. doesn't come down, and I have to sort of either restart or close an app. So, or it won't play immediately. Now, I am I'm like you, 99.9, I would say, percent certain that if I, once I do my reset, it will sort itself. Because I certainly haven't had it before in the anniversary of that fixed, you know, that got fixed ages ago in the old of Windows 10 Mobile. And certainly everything else about this is just so much more instant, stable, and solid. And I know you mentioned Bluetooth there. Well, if anybody's having Bluetooth problems, I've not had one. It is absolutely fantastic. And it, like I said about the wireless headphones, it's worked way better than I anticipated. So I think you're right. I think if I look, think back to other articles on other phones, going way back, you know, back to the old All About Symbian days, I'm sure when there was always a string of people with different bugs and different problems, and perhaps that's slightly device and use specific. And like you say, we just need to sort of recognize that there's a lot of cruft built up, try a reset and start again. Because it certainly can't be the case that absolutely everybody's getting it, because in fairness now, there are probably... the number of Windows 10 mobile users is probably down to the vocal minority. So I would expect if there was a common bug across the system now, it would be on the feedback hub, uprated to you know, five figures or whatever more. It would be the highest, because people that are left, basically the people that are really interested and really probably with the platform. I mean, perhaps there are some business users and other users who just happen to have it, but certainly in updating to Creators Update by now, I would have thought there would have been a lot of vocal press about it if there were entrenched common problems that with the platform. So yeah, I'm definitely going to try a reset, and maybe the next time you post on it, I'll comment on how it went.
Yeah, well, there are various tutorials up on the site in terms of the sequences to go through. So just in case you miss a step, Jason, do follow along.
I will.
Did you see over in America the Cerulean Moment, which is a Wharton Brooks, American company, led by Greg Murphy, a 10 mobile Windows phone enthusiast? He basically set out to create his own own device, if Microsoft weren't going to make phones anymore. He jolly well was. It's called the Cerulean Moment, and he wanted $1 million to basically get it all up and running, which I thought was a very reasonable target, actually. But the problem was that the phone he had designed, stroke specified, it may have looked okay when he specified it a year ago to investors, but in mid-2017, it looks very, very mid-range and ordinary. I suspect that's the main reason why it failed. I did comment in the story, Jason, that $1 million that he was asking for is about the thing Satya Nadella could find down the side of his sofa. So I really think Microsoft just have bunged him $1 million and seen what he did with it. But any comments on the whole saga?
Yeah. And I think I agree with you, probably reading the same from yourself, that it was great to see. I mean, wow, what enthusiasm that is. That's amazing. You know, and it does make you think, well, maybe, you know, that 1% that they could have, or less than probably 0.001%, they could have just bunged him of their cash that they could have sorted it. But then, I don't know, how would that have looked? Would that have looked maybe that, well, you know, Microsoft returning to these small private investors to make the phones with their OS? It could have, I don't know if it would have hindered the image. I mean, obviously the image isn't great, but I don't know if it would have helped, hindered more than it would have helped. And I think, as you say, personally, as a mid-range phone, it made me think, well, you know, this shows you, okay, $1 million, it's small to them, but it's obviously quite difficult to raise in these sort of crowdfunding sites that we have. And that gets you a mid-range phone. Well, what do you need then for a flagship device? And also, not just the actual money to actually build and distribution, etc., whatever that may be, but just the innovation. So in some ways, it does sort of speak to that, yeah, you can make an average phone for chump change from Microsoft, and maybe they could definitely afford it to put into something much bigger, but how long does that take? How much further does that get them in what is ultimately a loss-making market, sad to say. So it was really interesting and good to see, but like you, I don't know, I wasn't too surprised it failed, and you know, and it's certainly a shame, but perhaps it just at least speaks to the amount of enthusiasm that is still out there.
Yeah, and every time I do a camera piece, people urge me, Steve, why don't you specify a phone? The creator Steve Lumia or some other fancy name, you know, with the killer camera and all the features you've been raving about over the years, all in one device, and we'd buy it. But the amount of hard work and money and time and patience and everything else that goes into creating a first-party smartphone shouldn't be underestimated from scratch, even in today's times, Jason, when we've got commoditization of components, you can kind of find something off the shelf and tweak it, even taking a reference design from some Chinese company and putting your own stamp on it, and then then specifying the highest components, making sure they're fully integrated, getting the software stack right, getting the OS just right, adding your own tweaks. It's an awful lot of work and takes an awful lot of money. And I think that shouldn't be underestimated, which is partly why the biggest people in the biggest companies in the phone world are literally the biggest companies, the ones people who can afford to throw 100 million there and 500 million there on R&D, because it takes all that to make a really great phone.
Yeah, and you know, I still go back, and perhaps I'm being too rose-tinted here, that the 950 in spec has a lot of the things, perhaps not as Xenon flash, it probably hasn't got, but it's certainly got still one of the best, if not the best camera in a lot of situations. Yeah. It's got the removable storage, it's got a removable battery, et cetera, glance screen, all this other stuff. So there is a lot there. So, you know, in terms of actual base spec, it's there. The probably the real difficulty is if you were asked to make the next great thing. So, okay, the last Apple iPhone had a great camera, a real innovation. Is there anyone else out there that had ever suggested that? Probably not. Maybe in some R&D departments for people who thought about it, and obviously they did, and that's why it came out with that, probably from old Nokia people, sadly, in some ways. But that shows that, you know, to actually get to the next level, which is where you need to be in one of these big companies in a market like the commoditized market of smartphones today to make real some money from the whole enterprise, which is ultimately what they have to be there, sadly, for, then, you know, you need even more research, even longer lead times, et cetera, and even more money. It's true. It's not a cheap business if you really want to get to a cutting edge.
Yeah, I wrote a piece in the week, Services First. It seems the Lumias had to go, and that's a crying shame. I wanted to bemoan the fact people have been saying every time quarterly results come out, oh dear, Windows phones, market share's down again. But this is what happens if you don't make any Windows phones. If you don't sell product XYZ, you shouldn't be surprised when sales of XYZ are zero, because you're not selling it anymore. And I think people are drawing slightly too many, or relishing the doom and gloom scenario rather a bit more than they should. My contention was that Microsoft should have left itself, though, somewhere to fall back on by keeping at least one factory going, making these blessed things. They stopped selling the 950 and 950 XL. They stopped making them sometime mid 2016, in terms of the factories literally closing down and being reassigned. And that was something that really gets me angry, really, that they went to such lengths and left themselves nowhere to fall back on. It would have been great mid-2017 for them to say, okay, well, we're moving to, this is our path to Windows 10 on ARM, this is our path to our mobile strategy. Okay, we're now on iOS, we're on Android, but we're also on Windows 10 mobile as well, and we have a device which we still sell, we still make. Look at 950, 950 XL, whatever, and they're now down to £250 and £300 respectively. They're really great value, as you already said, with the removable storage, the removable battery, the class-leading camera, all of that. The processors, the chipsets are not that far behind. They've got plenty of RAM, and they run Redstone 3 absolutely beautifully. They could have shown people, look, okay, this is we have a presence in mobile as well as a presence in hybrids and laptops and desktops and HoloLens and all the rest of it. Now, because they're literally not making them anymore, apart from the enthusiasts like you and me who bought them back in the day, apart from people who are seeking these things out in clearance bins and secondhand sales and eBay and whatever, there's really no way to buy something that runs the current Windows 10 on ARM, which is Windows 10 mobile. It's just a crying shame that Microsoft missed a trick here, in my view.
Yeah, and my heart absolutely agrees with you. And ultimately, I would have loved for them to use that 110 billion, I don't know, enough to run the NHS in England for a whole year and more, from my word knowledge, to use that to have plowed into the mobile market, to picked up where Nokia had left off, where they'd got to, certainly in Europe, had some double-digit market share, but nowhere in America, which is very, very important to remember. And to plow into that and pull out devices, or even, like you say, pick up and do something this year. But part of me can see a reason as to why they've got to where they are. Now, the one key fact, I think, in this is the change in CEO. Steve Ballmer bought Nokia, as if I remember my history right, you may have to correct me, and Satya Nadella sold it. So there was a clear change in focus there. And that change in CEO was driven by shareholders who ultimately owned the company. And they were saying they weren't happy with what Ballmer had done, and he had missed the boat on smartphones, on tablets, on watches, and lots of other things that Microsoft were in way before Apple had gone into them, and they'd not managed to capitalize on it. So as much as he'd done some good things for their revenue overall, and a lot of innovation just wasn't working. So they caused a change in CEO. This new CEO has a change in strategy. Now, I don't know the inner workings of a company the size of Microsoft. I know some pretty big companies, and I know some pretty big organizations, how they work. And there's a key, you know, I think, and I know I'm arguing a devil's advocate, because as I said at the start, passionately, I would prefer them to say, but there is a key difference between strategy and tactics. And a strategy is not to limp along in a market that is loss-making, that you are making a loss in, and that you are not really progressing anywhere. And as a brand, probably not really, maybe not really doing yourself any favors amongst the common, you know, amongst the mass of people, particularly when, as I say, America's market share was so low. So why not stop and reboot? And certainly having heard some interviews, there was an interview I heard elsewhere with one of the Windows Insider leads, and she spoke clearly what was quite a party line. She obviously wasn't really a mobile tech enthusiast, but it was quite clear that there was a party line here from Microsoft that was saying, no, we're not the Microsoft of old. Microsoft of now, of 2017, doesn't stay in markets trying to play catch-up. It gets ahead, does something new, does HoloLens, does the Surface, does different things in Xbox. I wouldn't know all that great stuff, but they've done some good stuff from what I see. Does something different and doesn't try and chase a market in the way that they would have done had they followed the Nokia strategy, particularly when, as I say, not only is the whole market loss-making, but obviously Nokia were even more loss-making, which is why they were so far behind. Now, we can see, in fairness, that some different strategies from other players in the market. I think two particular notables are BlackBerry and Sony. So Sony have reportedly, are admitting, they are losing money on mobile, but they just need to be there, so they are going to continue to do it. That's a different strategy. That's the kind of strategy that we're talking about, staying in the market no matter what. BlackBerry have gone down a different route, and they're actually capitalizing on other parts of their assets and pretty much shelving their own operating system. And obviously that wasn't an option for Microsoft to easily just say, well, let's just forget Windows then. So I think it is a difference in strategy. Now, I still say all this, and at the bottom line of it, when I hear that that same interview and that lady whose name I forget, sorry, was saying from the Windows Insider lead, well, you know, mobile phones aren't going to be here forever. This isn't the way that things are going to stay. And in my mind, perhaps I'm just not far thinking enough, I can't see this changing that massively. Now, maybe the technology will change. You know, some great stuff you see on sci-fi shows, foldable screens, all that stuff, and that would be fantastic. If we can get that, then that will certainly shake things up. But it seems to me that the market is more or less commoditized into one thing, like lots of things in fridges and all other areas. Now, the one really odd analogy I thought, and it'd be interesting to see what listeners think to this, I may be too off the wall, is I think of the car company Rover in the UK. So the car company Rover in the UK through the 70s and 80s, and I think it's the 90s, was hugely loss-making, trying to make normal cars, the saloon cars, small hatchbacks, all that kind of stuff, the big market that was out there. It got hived off and shelved and put to one side. And then in the meantime, Range Rover, albeit under new leadership, has not only gone on to sort of make more profits and do very well, but it's also started to make inroads into that very market that the original Rover was trying to do. But it's not done it by making the same thing everybody else does. It's taken what it's good at, the big 4x4, and said, hey, this isn't just a 4x4 that you can use in the field. You can use it for your family, for your holidays. And you've got all this room, and you can go over different terrain, and hey, it won't break down. So they've taken, which is almost, there's a certain analogy, maybe a stretch, but there's a certain analogy to saying, well, Microsoft saying, well, let's take Windows 10, not Windows 10 Mobile, not RT, Windows 10, and let's put it on a mobile device. Let's push it down into that market. Now, obviously, the analogy breaks down when you get into any detail, so will it work, will it not? I don't know. But I'm just saying there is an analogy there that says that a company that is trying to plow on in something where it is failing is destined to continue failing. And perhaps looking at its strengths, which is, you know, what businesses do. You do strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. You have many listeners will know about all this and all this kind of strategic planning. And you say, right, well, what are we good at? And what are our opportunities? Let's focus on that. What are we weak at? What are the threats? Well, let's get out of it. If it's weak, don't carry on. That isn't going to help us. So as much as I still wish they hadn't done it, I can rationalize it and I can sort of understand it. But obviously time will tell whether it is really successful.
Yeah, when they, Donna Sarkar and Terry Myerson and Panos Panay and all the rest of them, when they talk about what's next, We've gone through various concepts on the podcast over the last year or so, from everything from sort of a large phablet to something foldable to something that's really too big to be classed as a phone, but it's also too small to be classed as a PC, and yet which will do the job of both. There are all sorts of ways this could go. Instead, I was halfway through writing up a story at the moment on Project Rome, which Microsoft has announced, talking about a virtual personal operating system, and basically sort of codifying what I was talking about just now, in the fact that it doesn't actually matter what you're interacting with, and so that you can... we've gone beyond just having a phone and a laptop. We've now got, and beyond phone, tablet, laptop, we've gone now to wearables. We've gone to things over our eyes. We've gone to phones, small phones, large phones, hybrids, tablets, laptops, games consoles. We've got in-car voice-driven systems. There are so many ways now you can interact with all the services and all your data, all your information. And Project Rome is described as a personal operating system, just trying to find out, have a framework so that all of these form factors, all of these services, all of these applications, all your data, all of it can work harmoniously together. And you can kind of see this happening. I linked a long time ago to go to a thing called A Day Made of Glass, I think it was called, by the Corning people, the people who do the Gorilla Glass. And it's still a very, very good concept video to go back and watch, where people are literally flinging data from, they decide, okay, it's something's appeared on my phone screen, and they did with a simple gesture, they flick it and it appears much larger on a wall, and then they can interact with it on a wall and then talk to the processor, and they can do things via voice. And that's where I say this is going. When Microsoft is talking about things beyond the phone, or you will do a phone but you won't recognize it as a phone, I'm almost thinking that they're thinking holistically of something larger than a single piece of electronics in your hand, and to a way in which all of these bits of kit can all work together. And that really is futuristic thinking, but you know, we're not that far off it now.
No, I mean, that sounds really interesting. I'd see the analogy on that from Iron Man, and I think to some extent, and it's some earlier science fiction films, that being able to flick things from one screen to the next.
Yeah.
And if you think of where we are now, where, you know, you might have an Android phone and somebody with an Apple phone and a Windows, like, can we share files? I don't really know. Can I tap it? I don't know. I'll email you it. Oh no, you can't see the email. It's too small. It's too big. And it seems impossible to think you'd be able to just flick it onto another device. But I think that is, in fairness, I think you're right. When I look at that kind of Iron Man scenario, again, knowing some of the physics behind it, I think that is much, much closer than having glass screens, for example, which is actually a lot more difficult than people think. Having a glass screen you can see through and glows at the same time. So that idea of a single network, that sounds absolutely, you know, that sounds really, really interesting. I've not heard of that. And like I say, it sort of sounds, links into that thing about the people thing on the desk bar on the creators. Redstone 3, where you've been able to share files easily, being able to cross systems would make, I mean, that would be the ultimate, that would be a great move for Microsoft if they could also have that embedded in an Android device and in an iPhone. I don't know if it's going to be specific to a certain, you'd have to have the whole platform. But if it's a kind of messaging thing that can sit in, that there'd almost be a way to infiltrate into other systems and people to be effectively using Microsoft services and nothing else, even more than that our earlier letter writer mentioned. So I say letter writer, email, of course.
Yeah, can you remember back in the old days, Jason, when the mess we had, when you were trying to communicate with someone, I say, on a different desktop, so you had a Mac and they had a PC or vice versa, or perhaps they had WordPerfect and you had Word, or perhaps they'd sent you a zip archive and you only were equipped to handle ARJ archives. Or you can get the things are so much easier now. We forget how difficult things used to be to communicate between people, between devices, between applications. And we've kind of got to the point now where you can share something to any person or any application on any system. And on the whole, most things work. And I think this Project Rome idea of Microsoft is to take it the next stage. So literally everything works everywhere. And you never have to stop and think about the technical underpinnings of whether the protocols are going to match and whether the binaries are going to line up, because everything will have been taken care of for you, for the developer, for the user, for for the manufacturer, for the OS maker. Everything will just work. And I know this is kind of a grand unifying design, a bit like string theory, the physics world, you know, the grand theory of everything. But I think this is the way they're thinking. And, you know, as you say, we are nearly there. With all around me, I can see screens glowing, showing me the same information, the same time, the same notifications on the whole, because I've got the same apps installed. And I could pick any of one of them up and send you a tweet right now, any one of them up, and check my email and reply to something, any one of them up and look something up on Google, and the results would be identical, and the experience would be damn near identical, and I can just pick and choose with the screen size and the medium I want to receive the information in. We are living in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And you remind me of a story, I'm sure it wasn't too apocryphal, of, I think it may have been even in the 90s, when Tim Berners-Lee, you know, co-inventor of the web, and I think it was could have been Steve Jobs and certainly one or two other tech luminaries were on a plane trying to synchronize their calendars, and they spent the entire several hour flight being unable to do it. And at that point, that's one of the sort of developments that led to greater interoperability, because they said, this is just ridiculous. If we can't get this to work, then nobody can get this to work with the current technology. So yeah, we are certainly living way beyond that. The idea that I couldn't set up a calendar invite from my Windows phone to my lockdown work, admittedly Microsoft, but still a very lockdown system, also to my partner's Android phone and maybe somebody else's iPhone as well, a single calendar invite that will it work on all of them, telling me all the same information, where, when, and what. You know, that, you know, 20 years ago, perhaps a little bit less, would have been just amazing. So we've certainly, we are well on the way to that. And, you know, let's hope that for us enthusiasts in the Microsoft ecosystem, so that maybe they're going to be first to get there, or if not, you know, somebody else is. Because let's face it, you know, we're all tech enthusiasts in a lot of ways, and I love seeing the latest thing that Samsung or Apple do as well. But yeah, it'd be nice for Microsoft to get there first for a while, because they haven't been there for that much, I don't think.
I think Microsoft is certainly thinking ahead of the game here. I just noticed that Google I.O., which is on at the moment as we record this, Google has been detailing some of its grand design as well. So there's clearly great minds are afoot and doing exciting things for the future. Before we finish, Jason, a slinky link into things that do work and are compatible. We have a third-party UWP app called Tiles for Outlook. And as the name suggests, it provides extra configurable live tiles for your Outlook calendar. I was quite impressed by this. Did you see my little write-up on the site?
I did. I installed it, using it straight away, absolutely happy as. It's brilliant. And in some ways, it's slightly annoying, because you sort of think, Microsoft, this is what you should be doing with live tiles. But maybe that's definitely an argument for another day, and we can talk about, you know, developer outbedded and all that stuff. But I think it's really good, and it is exactly the kind of thing that I like about live tiles, and it looks really neat and tidy, and it shows you lots of information, and it's really easy to use, and it's seamless as well. It's not a different calendar application. You tap the tile and it goes to your Outlook calendar, just like the first party, the Microsoft shortcut does as well. So it's I really enjoy this. I'd like to hope that they can still keep working, maybe develop a mail version as well, because I do think the mail tile is a little bit underpowered and could show a lot more. You could, you know, fit more than just one email on there, I think, somehow. I hope they do more on that. I certainly, yes, download it straight away.
Yeah, well, if you're listening to this, go and download it and also pay to upgrade it as well, because it's highly, highly worthwhile, and we want to support the developer and see what else they can do. We're out of time, Jason, but where can people find you online?
I'm on Twitter at Jason Snowden, D-E-N Snowden. That's how I spell it, and certainly other more famous people do. I am on Google+, but I admittedly, it's mainly for your kind of stuff, the different podcasts you do, Steve, but I'll certainly reply to anyone who wants to have a chat about anything.
Lovely. Okay, well, we'll catch up with you in a couple of months, Jason. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye for now.